welcome to Cavaliers Break Bad, the greatest of the unofficial Breaking Bad podcasts. We're just feeling particularly bold tonight, so I thought I'd say something. Yeah. I'm Sarah.
I'm Creepy.
And tonight, we're today, depending on when you're listening, we are discussing Season 5, Episode 12, Rabid Dog. I was about to say Problem Dog. Obviously, a callback to that particularly famous
Season 4 episode.
Yes. Now, let's just start by addressing something. Kind of a bit of a cock-up on our part last week, although not as big...
Oh, just overexcitement, I reckon.
All right, so basically we were talking about the final shot of Jesse with the gasoline, and we were like, oh, I think we might have said he burnt the house down.
Our minds just rushed along to the question, you know?
Yeah.
How to get burned.
And the thing is, all right. Now, obviously, it didn't get burned at all, but we're not blind. We did watch Season 5, Episode 9 three times. Like, we didn't actually think the house burnt down. We meant that the house got burned, like, on the inside. And that's not uncommon to have, basically, the entire interior of a house destroyed and still have the structure
intact.
And thanks for Dave, who emailed and pointed that out to us.
Yeah, of course.
All right, like, just so you can still trust us, we're not complete idiots. Like, we realized the house was still standing, but we did kind of use the wrong choice of words. And also, we were wrong in general. I mean, maybe if you go back and look at it, the house clearly isn't fire damaged, and we were wrong. And obviously, it didn't get burned, as you will see in this episode. So, let's start with the start.
That's a pretty good one. The cold open. It's interesting. Walt at Jesse's, and just carrying on from kind of what we've seen with the other episodes so far this season is that they've all been displaced somewhat from the action. So the first That's my bloody desktop. That's my desktop picture. That was that flash forward. Then you've got Jesse in the X-Files. Then you've got Todd. So the thing is, when you've got Walt going straight to Jesse's, the first thought is that, they're finally going immediately on from where it left off last episode, which is a bit of a shock at first, but then you realise later, of course, that that isn't the case.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting little...
It's
mystery.
A deceptively linear, but it's actually not. And that's the thing, it's kind of not through halfway through the episode that you realise how strange that cold open is. All right, so this is Sam Catlin. He wrote it and directed it.
Which is an interesting one. We'd like to point to the fact that it's the first thing, well, according at least to his IMDb page, it's the first thing he's ever directed, and we'd like to note the similarity there with Mastris on Dead Freight.
George Mastris on Dead Freight. Well, that's a very common thing, is that writers on TV shows are sort of as favours given their first directing job, or their first professional directing job. You know, these people probably went through film school, so with Vince Gilligan.
Yeah.
And
bunch of buddies.
Well, yeah, it's really common, and it's kind of important that stuff like this does happen. I mean, this is how Vince Gilligan started directing when Chris Carter did him the same favour on The X-Files. Yeah. And once again, I think Catlin's directing was very good. However,
I agree. How much
it added up is another question. Mm. But this opening particularly is pretty brilliant in the way that they get the suspense and they kind of establish that Jesse's not in the house, and this sense of the unknowing, the unknown. You know, the most dangerous thing about this whole scene is the lack of Jesse's presence. Mm. And, where did he go?
Because naturally, what we've seen at the end of the last episode is that his presence is, as far as we're concerned, so, you know, like, it's not even a question at this point that he is there. He must be there to the point where that his absence is still very tense.
Yeah.
And, you know, you assume it's just a different kind of presence. But, you know, of course, like, that's kind of... And just, I'd like to make a point, again, of the directing, just particularly the average shot length in this. It's really, you know...
Well, I mean, as we kind of talked quite heatedly about last week.
And I'd like to take you up on something about that. I rewatched the scene where apparently there are a million fucking shots when they're watching the TV. There are 12 shots. There are 12 shots. The two shot on Hank and Marie from behind, but the TV as well. Then the normal shot.
Right,
on the
TV. Go through all 12.
But like, they're seriously. When you said, "Oh, there are a million fucking shots," there are 12 over 4.5 minutes,
12 shots over 2.5 minutes.
4.5.
4.5 minutes in a exposition scene in a television show is a lot of coverage.
No, it isn't.
On a television show.
No, but just as in they always keep coming back to the same shots. They keep coming back to the same shots. They aren't like, you know...
That's what I mean, though. They're cycling through 12. Like, it's not... It's not... It's...
You're talking about a lot of frame changes then, not necessarily a lot of...
Both. They're reusing, they're going back and forth between many different shots, which is quite unusual for a television show. It's not like...
4.5 minutes, isn't that? I think that's very restrained, and that's why I liked it. So, but I think it's...
No, it's not restrained. It's not restrained by any standards. That is not restrained television. That is the opposite.
No, for something like that, when you've got 3 points of focus... With like on different sides of the line in a room.
No, yeah. any television production would make it. All right, we're gonna get them on their faces. We're gonna. No. I watch more television than you. You are wrong.
I liked it.
Really. I liked it. I loved it. Okay, I'm just saying that you're wrong. Like it is not. It is an excessive amounts of shots for that kind of scene on a television show.
Oh, bloody hell. Anyway, I like the way they're covering it this season. It's nice. It's a good attitude to montage content.
Yes. But anyway, my favorite shot in this opening was when Walt opened... Yes. So yeah. Walt opens the door, the last door, Jesse's not there, and then the camera...
starts tracking back.
Starts tracking back as we kind of are revealed that...
Very tense.
Walt's alone in the house. Very tense. Yeah. And then we get the credits as... Oh, no. Then he walks out.
We see... And he sees the disc. The CD. With meth the disc. With the meth disc, which is a...
The disc of meth.
When was the last time Jesse was using, like, season 4? Or briefly...
No, I think he has been using... I think he was using when he gave the money away. Right, I'm not entirely sure.
I can't remember. But yeah, no.
I mean, we know he's been smoking a lot of pot in his absence. It's a gateway drug, kids.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a pretty tense cold open, but it's an odd one because it's so much a part of the main kind of plot of the show, which usually the cold open isn't and kind of relies on tension. Absolutely.
But it becomes more irregular and kind of more removed from everything else when the rest of the episode unfolds. When it
finally gets onto Jesse.
Yes. So it's kind of retroactively becomes a more standard Breaking Bad cold open.
Yeah. So, but I mean, just coming straight from the cold open into the first action of the body of the show is like that blue vent. When they're coming, like, tracking back through that blue vent.
Yeah, it's and obviously the blue... Yeah, and, like, blue... It's like, oh, they're cooking again. Oh, no, that's carpet cleaners. Yeah, exactly.
It's such a nice little callback to that little... That whole kind of... Just that whole visual aspect of Breaking Bad. It's lovely. I love it. So, yeah, that lovely blue vent shot took me back to the Vamanos Pest days. But it's so...
Yeah, that's what I thought. And particularly because I've just been watching a bit of the first part of season 5 recently. Vamanos Pest. I mean, some...
Oh, I can't. I really wanted. I'm waiting for Todd and Lydia.
Oh, love Todd. Brilliant. He's a good guy. Meth Damon.
Oh, gotta love him. But just another note on this. It's so odd to see an interaction with a genuinely legitimate business.
Yeah, we'd love to take your money,
like,
but...
Just like, mate, we'd it's just funny that this entire kind of environment and atmosphere for the entire show has just been about... I mean, apart from maybe doctors, like, everybody they've interacted with has, to some degree, been some level of corrupt. And they've just got these really just average dudes. Just, nah, man, can't take your money. I just love that. I think that's brilliant. That's fun.
Well, let's just talk about... I don't want to kind of micro dissect this bit. Let's just talk about this whole kind of first act of the Whites going to the hotel as one. It's really strange. Really, as I was watching, I was going, what? What's Hank doing? Why? This feels oddly contained. This feels like we're not moving as fast as we should be.
I liked that. I mean, particularly as you watch a lot more TV than I do, I watch a lot more film. Anything that kind of, I don't notice it necessarily as much as you might when like other characters kind of go missing for an extended period of time. So I wasn't bothered by that at all, and I think I just kind of went along with that. But just on that, I kind of felt this little sequence, this almost Krauty sounding music underneath it, where Walt's kind of running around with the petrol. I think the one worthwhile, really worthwhile moment of that is when, you know, we see him again in his tidy whities, and just he takes off his pants, has his tidy whities, and then he turns around, he's got a gun in the back.
Yeah, in the back of his underpants.
And I just think that's such a lovely little.
It's also a bit of a callback. It's also a bit of a callback to the pilot.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But the tidy whities are so Walt. Like, they're such a kind of Walt characteristic. But then again,
they're a Bryan Cranston characteristic because, of course, there was this whole thing that he took them from Malcolm in the Middle.
Right, but just anyway, going from that, turning around, literally just like on one, you've got the two sides of him, right? And then you've got the gun at the back with Heisenberg, which is a nice little, literally the arse end of Walt is Heisenberg with his gun under here. I just thought that was a nice little self-contained shot.
Well, it's a spectacular marathon of Walt waffles, though. I mean, my favorite line when he's spinning the web of bullshit is in my naivete.
Yeah, he's so self-deprecating.
And then
when he's being a genius.
Yeah,
just
he spilled everywhere on my hands. Oh, my groin! My groin, Skylar!
Oh, my
The same
God.
Groin that gave us our two wonderful children that I have toiled to protect.
Oh, my God. I love that Walt Jr. just calls him on his shit. Not because...
For
all the wrong reasons. You're just like... I was just like, what? Oh no.
And part of you is wondering, like, is Walt Jr. actually going to confront him?
Oh God.
Yes. Yeah, I know. It was a very strange one in that way.
Moving from that into the scene where he's with Saul, I mean, after they've moved to the hotel, Saul and Kirby, it's all of two minutes, if that, but it's a different kind of Saul. Really is. Like, I mean, it's the same kind of lines, but there is no point at which... And, I mean, Breaking Bad is a show that really has kind of made a point and kind of really been quite generous with underlighting characters' faces. But this is, I think, the first time, at least to my recollection, that we've seen Saul in complete darkness or chiaroscuro. It's an interesting thing for him because he is so,
well, no,
so
actually,
much the comic relief.
Unless you count, like, the first episode that he's in.
Oh, no.
Yeah, when they take him out to the desert.
No.
Well, actually, speaking of lighting, I think it's interesting because these episodes haven't been too... They've been quite brightly lit, actually, compared to last season, which I was, like, watching, like, they never keep... When it's just Skylar and Walt in the house in the first part of season 5 and they kind of at each other's throats, like, the house, all the lights are off. It's really interesting seeing how dark that season is, like, literally.
Mm. And there's a lot of chiaroscuro.
Yeah,
just foreshadowing, I mean, obviously, like, with the face-off aspect.
Not just that. Like, just the whole house is so dark. And diegetically, like, there are less lights are on.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
But this season, because it's had this more kind of, like, the evil within, they've kind of gone back to that suburban. Like, obviously, whenever you're in the Schrader household, it has to be very light. But going back to this scene with Saul in the car, it was just, like, the way it's all framed, it does feel very kind of very dodgy business, very mafioso sort of genre piece.
Meeting in a car.
I just love the fact, though, that Walt calls him out on his colourful metaphors. You're just full of colourful metaphors.
Oh, I love that, yeah. So we've got the tally, I reckon. We've got Belize and Old Yeller.
Yeah.
It's nice, yeah, it's fun.
And, all right, so this kind of sets up one of the most interesting themes of this episode, which is the idea that everyone wants to use/kill Jesse, and Walt is actually the only one looking out for him.
Yeah.
And I think this is interesting because in the moment when Jesse is completely pushing against him, in the moment when Jesse is now against Walter, like, you're still getting that their relationship, which kind of kickstarted the entire series, is still center stage as we kind of go into the end, which is really important, I think. They need a way to kind of keep Jesse in it without artificially bringing him back. Which is good.
Mm. And I think it's also, it's really just, I love that where Gail was the problem dog that Jesse took care of, Jesse is now the rabid dog for everyone else to take care of.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really kind of quite obvious to anyone who spent more than 2 minutes with the show. It's quite obvious, but it's just a really nice little, parallel.
Yeah, exactly. It's the rabid dog that had to be put down. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I feel like those episodes, and that's a Breaking Bad thing. They do the sort of rhyming titles thing. Bug and fly.
And Mars and, or Mars and no Mars, or however you... Mars, no Mars.
Although that's in the same season. No, there are some in the seasons. We talked about this earlier. I've forgotten the exact examples. But yeah, it's quite interesting.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, this scene particularly I'm really just really like Saul in this scene. I kind of want to see more of that.
Well, you could if Saul got his own television series.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That'd be so good. It'd be such a good, like, kind of half stoner show, I reckon.
Well, I know what you mean. We get back, also, actually, speaking of Better Call Saul, I like the fact that sort of, you know, Walt and Huel are on a first name basis. I'm like, I'm just loving more Huel. Any excuse for more Huel.
Lavelle Crawford's a genius. He's the best.
I like the whole dynamic when Walt goes back into the hotel and then he's talking to Skylar and she's just
calling.
So closed off to him, so fed up with his bullshit. You know, have you been spying on me? And I feel just awful about it.
I love that, yeah. No, Walt's fake outrage and her fake shaming responses is quite...
The fact that they're both kind of swirling drinks, they're just like, they're the most sort of bitter, used up couple.
I quite like this scene. Also, just like to make a point, like, Skylar has been dead behind the eyes all season. She looks different. And I mean, credit to Anna Gunn. She's been just like nailing that, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm really, Skylar's really interesting this, this whole season, really, since season 5, she kind of came into her element as she sort of became Walt's hostage and then his most kind of, what's the word? Complicit accomplice, or the most sort of, you know, she is actually of all his accomplices, including Jesse, you know, she is the one who is arguably most culpable at this stage.
Yeah.
And that really just started recently. But it's very interesting, the kind of whole dynamic here when she's saying, you know, you've got to kill Jesse.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is kind of a new low for Skylar.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting, though, that she kind of brings back the whole thing about, you know, someone coming to our door. So it keeps going back to that whole thing of, like, you think someone will knock on our door? You think, no, that's me. I am the one who knocks.
Yeah.
They call back to that quite a bit. There's a scene in season 5, I think in 51, where he says, oh, I thought you were the danger. And it keeps going back to that whole theme of Walt trying to sell himself to her as the dangerous man.
Mm. Oh, yeah, and I love the diegetic responses to stuff that's obviously become part of the Breaking Bad kind of cult. But I also love, again, like, she asked him, so he has never hurt anyone, and, like, Walt's thinking, like, well, not unless I told him to.
Yeah, I know, that's what I was thinking, like, exactly. It was, and it's kind of semi-true. Except for the time that he, yeah, I mean, who has Jesse really gone? Oh, well, I mean, he didn't kill the drug dealers.
No, he didn't.
No, I mean,
see, that's the thing.
He's not a particularly violent guy, unless, you know, he's extremely angry, or Walt tells him to. Yeah.
So, you know, but I think it's interesting here when Skylar says that she's assuming that it's a euphemism, and Walt is actually outraged or shocked to some degree. But he's almost worse with... He's so unconvincing with that. He's almost worse with truth than lies when the way...
With Jesse.
Yeah, when she's like, I'm going to assume that's a euphemism, and then he puts it together and goes, you mean, you think I'm going to kill him? Like, no, he could have just been like... He could have killed that right there, but, like, he's so unconvincing.
I know, he just loves spinning the bullshit. But furthermore, I just think that he's kind of, when he's talking to Skylar, like, when he's trying to rationalize why he needs to protect Jesse, he doesn't realize that, oh, you know, maybe there isn't some Heisenbergian logical reason why I have to save him. I just really want to protect Jesse.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that is something that we have seen for a long time, and the conclusion of this episode does kind of challenge that. And I mean, we'll get to it when we get to it, but I think we're kind of seeing that a bit differently to the way a lot of people are. But anyway, going from like this entire kind of first act, it's difficult to call it a first act because it's just a separate action from the rest of this.
And here's where we kind of hit my problem with the episode.
What, once we've got Jesse
It reveals the overall problem of the episode. It's a problem that is with the episode as a whole, but I may as well just choose now to introduce my issues with it.
Right, I dig it once we get here.
No, but once we get here, I love it, and then you realize that they've made a mistake. All right, so
okay.
I don't like this episode as nearly as much as I do
the other
three.
So far, this
it's one of the weaker of the season. It's not bad, obviously, by any standard, particularly, but it's not as good. You know, if it's been a kind of run of 10 out of 10s, you know, maybe this is an 8 out of 10 or something. But so basically these episodes have just been kind of all obsessed with just destroying everything they've built up.
Mm.
You know, they destroy Hank and Walt, and then they destroy Marie and Skylar, and then they destroy Jesse and Walt last episode. So it's this constant unraveling of this whole kind of loose stitching they've done throughout 5 years of television. And so I guess just what really frustrated me about this episode is this is all about building up again. Like, they're actually, so you've got to get Jesse and Hank together, and you've actually got to build it up from kind of this place. You've got to get Walt in with Todd again. And so it's kind of a reverse of the momentum of, like, they've tipped the dominoes and then they've just stopped it briefly.
I don't know. No, I think it's just, it's just a very kind of Breaking Bad kind of thing to just kind of misdirect. You know, like, you know, you think it's going to head one way and then it kind of does a little bit of a U-turn veers off slightly. But that's kind of what's so brilliant about it. I mean, I didn't see Hank coming. So, I love it when, you know, you're finally like, oh, we're back to Jesse, it's going to be explained, and your first thought is, yeah, that you're going to see how you... For me, it was almost like the way it was edited and everything, like, having seen it last week, and then even in the previously on AMC's Breaking Bad, like, the edits, like, I swear, like, in this, it's like all of 20 minutes into the episode, and the edits are a lot quicker, so when you get accustomed to that over a couple of seconds, you're like, oh, so it's all going to be revealed really, really quickly, and then almost going to jump forward in time to where we were, say, with Skylar and Walt in the hotel saying, what's one more? And then the rest of the action of the episode is going to carry on from there as well. But the thing is, it obviously, once you kind of see Hank come in, you realize that it's going to double back on itself and go through on its own line, which is a really interesting kind of more, you know, the thing that instantly springs to mind, it's not necessarily right, but Russian, like that kind of Russian monic.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's like obviously the
taking different routes or taking different kind of perspectives on a similar event.
That leads to my second big problem with this episode.
I like that.
No, I liked it as well, but they didn't follow through with it enough. So you have this whole sustained thing of, you know, he comes to the house, Jesse's not there. So you're in the back of your mind, you got, where is Jesse?
Mm.
Where is Jesse? You have kind of 11 minutes or even 15 minutes with Walt and Skylar
and looking for him and everything.
And Walt Jr. And they're looking and it's all this thing. And then, and then they cut back and you find out what's been going on with Jesse. And that's fascinating. But sort of once that happens, then the episode just kind of goes into a regular momentum. You're sort of still cutting back and forth between Hank and Walt. And that kind of unusual structure suddenly doesn't feel... It just kind of feels like one little gimmicky flashback in the middle rather than something that affects the entire structure of the episode.
No, I don't mind that, because I think what's the point at which they start to interact again?
Really early on, because it's
I don't think so. No, it's not until Walt calls him to say well, it's the scene where Walt calls him to say, let's meet up at the plaza. Well, where Walt's with Junior. But that's not for another... It's enough. Like, it is... I think it's enough to justify it. And then you've got point at which they have to interact. So
it's not so much about them interacting. It's just about the cutting back and forth. Like, if they'd had a...
But all that is kind of prompted by a certain kind of crossing of their paths once more. So, I mean, again, I suppose
it's that divide and conquer, you know. We've kind of set up the whole team white, team purple thing. And now you've got Jesse on that side and it's sort of all divided. But it just doesn't feel divided enough. If you're going to use that device of you're kind of telling two sides to the war, I think you need to commit to it more rather than just kind of jump back, whoa, and then kind of go, all right, now we're just going to do a kind of regular Breaking Bad episode.
Yeah,
because it's not as dramatically isolated as it is at the start of the episode, so it kind of leaves the episode feeling a bit inconsistent.
I don't really have a problem with that, because otherwise I can't really see how you do it other than cut into some kind of non-linear crap which Sorkin tried out with various things and didn't really
Yeah, but
work.
Mad Men, think, Mad Men yeah, did right, that right. and it worked really well. Yeah, okay. When did Sorkin do it?
He did it a lot in Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, and there's various kind of... I think there's a few, I can't remember.
Yeah, but Sorkin's a bit of a... Anyway. I think they could have done it.
And I see your point that they could have done it better, but I don't really see how they could have done it without the Walt-Jesse meet-up at the end.
Yeah, so, and I mean, I've got a problem with that as well.
Okay, anyway... just regardless, when Hank and Jesse kind of meet up for the first time in this episode, I really like it because it's really inconsistent, Hank and Jesse's relation to each other. I think that's really interesting, and again, we're starting to see, normally in this situation, we maybe suspect that we'd be thinking, oh, Jesse, stop relenting and just go with Hank, because he's the guy to go with.
But Hank's, like, of course, using Jesse. And
yeah,
that's
exactly, that's the thing. We're seeing more of Hank's hubris than Jesse's. Jesse is completely isolated and wrecked, and you know, Hank is the one who's driving all of it, but Hank is the one who's fucking it up rather than Jesse not doing anything. I think Hank's not so much
fucking it up. He's just, you know, he's more selfishly motivated than Jesse. I mean, Jesse just kind of has this sort of weird sense of morality, you know. Hank's a DEA agent. Walt's saving his own ass, you know. Whereas Jesse doesn't have any particular stake in anything other than kind of a sense of getting, you know, bringing down the devil, Mr. White.
Yeah, and I mean, I think...
I mean, that's the whole thing that this season's been playing off, is Jesse is this rogue element. He doesn't have an allegiance. His only allegiance is to kind of what he feels. Whereas Hank's much more coloured by sort of his occupation and his sort of moral code. Jesse doesn't have sort of a thought-out moral code. He just does what he thinks is right.
I mean, yeah, sure. But just in seeing the way that their interaction plays out and knowing the kind of bearing that it will have on the action of the rest of the season, knowing that this allegiance could be massive, when you see Hank get Jesse into the car when just after he's kind of talked him out of the house, you see him kind of reach across and put the seatbelt on and everything, and it's a very kind of, could be read, depending on how the rest of their relationship plays out, could be read as quite warm or even, you know, feeling in for the more kind of fatherly aspects of Walt's regard for Jesse. But the thing is, you parallel that with the shot at the moment at the end where he's getting him to go out onto the plaza to meet up with Walt. And he's like, yeah, let's go get him, Tiger, or whatever the fuck he says. It's like completely misreading Jesse.
I know.
He doesn't bother to meet Jesse where... like, on whatever plane he's on. And that's the only way he's going to do it, and that's why it's not going to work.
Yeah,
because it's staring him in the face. The reason that... one of the reasons that Jesse worked with Walt for so long was the 50-50 partnership. He makes a point of that himself. But he doesn't... He's staring him in the face. Jesse says, like, he didn't have to make you 50-50 partner. He's like, yes, he fucking did.
No.
But the thing is, Hank completely misses that. He misses the fact that Jesse only really responds to people who treat him equally.
No, to some degree. No. See, it's more the sense that, because Walt never treated him equally. Walt was all...
Well, at least it was pretense of equal, so Jesse could come back at him and call him bitch or whatever.
No. See, it wasn't that about... I mean, clearly, if he wanted a relationship that had a sense of equality, that wasn't it. I see. The reason... what made Walt so fundamental to Jesse was that he was the teacher. It was always that, apply yourself, you can do better. And I think there's this sense that Walt had expectations of Jesse. Whereas when Hank gives him that, go get him, buddy, it's kind of superficially saying, like, we're a team, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But honestly, you're just this junkie that I hope doesn't fuck things up, you know? Whereas Walt wasn't like that. Walt expected something of Jesse. And when Jesse fucked up, Walt got really pissed off. And it all goes back to that old paper he marked that said, apply yourself, you know? The reason it... You know, Jesse kept coming back to Walt, berating him, and he never treated him like an equal. He always treated him like he was lesser because there was this sense of expectation, because everyone else gave up on Jesse. Everyone else just didn't bother with Jesse, whereas Walt put himself through hell to actually get Jesse to do shit that he wasn't necessarily capable
of. Yeah, sure, but, like, so much of the point of it is that Jesse doesn't necessarily see that. And you see it in the, not the interrogation, but in the interview, like, he says, like, Hank points out to Jesse... Walt, he cares about you. He's like, no, he doesn't. He's always going off at me, all this stuff. Like that, that's...
Yeah, Jesse doesn't see it, but I'm saying that that's what he responds to, knowingly or not.
I think, but, like, to a degree within himself, he really likes to think that he has some kind of control or some kind of influence on a situation, and Walt read that. That's why he responded to him in so many ways, like saying, we'll be 50-50 partners, and particularly after... after Jesse started riding along with Mike and then started cooking as well. And, you know, Jesse in season 4 and really started to get a lot of the power in their balance. And then Jesse became integral. Then once, you know, he plays on the loyalty there, if there is some established balance, then that's what he plays off of a lot.
But so when you look at the relationship with Mike, I mean, what Mike, it was the father figure or the mentor figure. It was all about, you know, we're not equal. I am clearly no more than you, but I actually think...
But he shows respect.
Yeah, but it's not about the respect. It's about that sense of potential. It's about that sense of someone actually working on Jesse, not giving up on Jesse.
Yeah,
whereas
sure.
Hank clearly will give up when Jesse fucks up, which he effectively says he is going to do.
But ultimately, like, see, for me, that is so... That's... Yeah, absolutely, I agree with you, but I think that's all a part of the respect. And, like, at least to Jesse, they... frame a lot of their interaction with him for him to think at times that there is some degree of respect going both ways there.
Yeah,
and that's the thing that he's completely missing with Hank, and it's why Hank won't get Jesse in a position where he needs him if he continues on the way he's going. But, I mean, the fact is, you see it with Gomi and Hank, is that he genuinely sees him as a nutbag method, as a junkie murderer. And that, and, you know...
I know,
that,
and that's
what, his hubris.
Yeah, and that's exactly, that's what weakens Hank. And also, I love the fact that Jesse and Marie meet for the first time in this episode. And just her... And it's interesting the way they're framing Marie all about, you know, her hatred of Walt, how she wants to poison Walt. Lady Macbeth moment.
Yeah, that's that scene immediately after Jesse and Hank at... just realized we were talking about all that with Jesse and Hank at Walt at the White House. But we go from that into Marie's therapy session with Dave, and this is a fun one. Her court ordered therapist who she's been seeing since season one. So that's a fun one. But saxitoxin, which produces a flaccid paralysis that leaves its victims conscious through the progression of symptoms, which is, you know, just a lovely little... That's the condition of Heisenberg.
Yep.
That's the uncertainty principle in a lot of ways. But, you know, this is just... That's just quite nice. I like that. But,
Yeah. Anyway, but I also just love him waking up in the Schrader house, and he's going into through the bookshelf, and you've got the Deadwood box set on Blu-ray. And also he picks up the Ronald Reagan biography.
I saw the body language of horses on there as well.
Yeah, I thought the Ronald Reagan biography was a nice touch. I was like, of course he would, and it's a first edition, of course. But
also just...
And what's so funny about this scene is we actually get to the confession that everyone was going on about, you know, was going to be in the first...
In the scene of last episode,
and now we get it after we'd all kind of written off, and it's such a nice opening statement. I first met Mr. White, Walter White, in junior chemistry. He was my teacher,
and then that's all they cut it. Yeah, and see, that's the thing. This is where you hope for method actors, because if he improvised an entire confession, that in like maybe a year or something, that would just be the best Easter egg. ever. Like Aaron Paul as Jesse improvising his entire confession. Like, that would be...
recapping the entire series. Oh, and I love when they're saying, you know, what are our options? Do we go after Drew Sharp? Is that our
So you see that he has actually... And I mean, it's not just
But there's been heaps of that in the series of just kind of like, you know, sort of referencing all the shit that is built up in Walter White's sort of rap sheet.
But that's the thing is that, like, he calls back, you know, he calls back to the fact that he paid for rehab, which is beginning of season 3, running the two drug dealers over in half measures, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Mate, like, you know, and I mean, all this stuff this season, Lydia and Feminist Pest and Drew Sharp and everything. So he really does spill it. Like, that would be so good to watch. I mean, like, I know it wouldn't exist.
Yeah, I could see that as a special feature. I
would love that. That would be so awesome.
And then the part I think that's most telling is this scene afterwards where Hank and Jesse and Gomi are talking, and they're sort of talking about what they do in terms of the meetup. And and Jesse has this whole idea that Walt is omnipotent. You know, he Mr. White, he's the devil. And I like this says that he's smarter than you. He's luckier than you. And it's like, that's Walt so much. Like, everything just manages to go Walt's way.
And he
to the point that it is semi supernatural. Like, if you knew him, you would be afraid of him because everything just always turns out his way. And I mean, that's the thing we've been getting.
ABQ, but
nothing goes really wrong for him. I suppose, you know, I mean, he just fucks shit up for everyone else. You know, but when he's really in a jam, it will go in his favor.
Yeah.
You know, it won't go for Tuco or for Gus or for the 10 guys in Prisoners. You know. They'll die and he'll continue living and being killed by the council.
In this, we really see Hank's hubris start to come out with a couple of beats. You've got Jesse saying, it's just my word against his, this is going to be pointless, and he's worried about it. And then Hank is completely unsympathetic. He just says, oh, Gummy, can you get the curtains? I think we've got some flare problem or whatever going on. And you know, and then he when Jesse says he's smarter than you, he's luckier than you, Hank just, he's not even listening.
He's not paying attention. I know, Hank, and it's not going to work for Hank.
Off on his own thing. And this is the thing, we've been building this rapport and love for Hank for so long, and he's just destroying it because he's just not looking at what's going on. He's just too focused on his white whale.
Yeah,
and he cannot do anything about it until he learns to deal with it.
But I mean, as we move towards the end, I agree. But
he's an emperor now. He's an emperor now. He's ASAC. He's kind of, you know.
I don't think it's so much that. It's just
just calling back to my emperor kind of, like, this is a show about emperors more than it's about crime or anything. It is, like, it's a different.
I don't think that's really essential, though, to who Hank is and what his major flaw is.
No, I know, but just in the way that he's approaching this and approaching having power and approaching having a lot of responsibility at the moment, particularly with this kind of whole thing, it's just not going well.
But he says, you know, he's going to, you know, if Jesse dies or fucks up, you know, then we've got it on camera.
Mm.
So, I mean, Saul wants to kill Jesse. Skyler wants to kill Jesse. Hank, you know, wants whatever he can get out of Jesse. If that involves Jesse dying, then fantastic.
Yeah.
So the only person who wants to save Jesse is Walt. And that's the great irony, is that as everyone is playing. And this is what I'm saying. I reckon that last, when we see Walt at the end, that is who he's going to protect. It will be Jesse. Because he still cares. He will always put himself first, and, you know, he will do terrible things, but he still, in the end, cares for Jesse. And I reckon when he's got nothing less to lose, that is what his last action will be, even though he does call out a hit on him.
Well, I mean, that might be just another really, really good Breaking Bad misdirect.
Yeah, but that's true.
I mean, you know.
He could be putting out a hit on Hank,
I think, you know, like, particularly the last... Yeah, exactly. Like, the last episode ending with petrol being poured all over the house, and then, you know, well, we saw where that ended up.
Yeah,
you know,
that's like true.
Calling a Nazi about our job. I mean, you know. You know. I'm not going to finish that sentence.
Oh, yeah, don't. Well, I mean, let's just talk about this last scene and we go into the plaza also,
Honestly, this scene pissed me off. There's a really nice shot parallel with the last episode where just as Jesse starts to talk, the camera moves behind the viewfinder. It's fucking identical to the one where Walt's filming his confession.
Yeah, actually, sorry, I did notice that. Yeah, when they go behind the viewfinder. And that's what I'm saying. It was almost like a tease by them going, ah, we did it. We actually did the confession. We were just fucking with you. Don't worry. It's here.
But the thing is, considering again, even then, how that watching that confession, I was thinking of the CNN thing. I mean, we discussed that last week with the blowing up of the image and kind of going in really tight to see the pixels and everything, and the way that visually reminded me a lot, and with the content and everything of a CNN kind of thing, it instantly drew my mind to that again, and you know, I just felt like that was worth mentioning. I loved it. It was.
This final scene I didn't like. Frankly, so, the plaza.
The entire plaza.
Just the whole thing of just kind of like the meet and then, you know, who do we not know and we're wearing a wire and, you know, Gomi and Hank go back forth. What's he doing? Oh, no, we've got a problem. There's a rogue element. And I'm just like, I've seen this before.
There's also the aspect, and I don't usually pick up on this kind of thing because people who really kind of whinge about suspension of disbelief piss me off, but I don't get how Hank and Gomi would be able to hold Jesse, create a sting like this without DEA involvement, how they could take that as evidence. And I cannot pretend for a moment to be a lawyer.
No, that didn't bother me at all. No, I just thought the whole thing was kind of a bit generic and like, I expect more from Breaking Bad. And apart from anything, I don't know. It just felt sort of, they would come up with something different. I felt like I was watching sort of an average episode of Homeland, which is a good show, but Breaking Bad should be fucking next level. It also kind of reminded me of the whole scene from season 2 where they are arresting the fake Heisenberg, Fosenberg, as I like to call him, which is a much more interesting and kind of funny twist on that same thing, whereas this was just the kind of standard, you got to do a meet, you're wearing a wire, people are watching you, oh wait, what's he doing? Oh no, something different, something's going wrong.
It's another wannabe Heisenberg. As we noted with Declan and his guys, we've got a bald guy with a goatee.
That was what was brilliant, though, about the way they set that up, because the guy who sort of tips Jesse off, I was like, is that Lydia's guy?
Well, yeah.
It could have been. You're kind of going, I think Jesse's imagining it, but maybe it is, you know, it is one of the Nazis or it is one of Lydia's, you know, it is because we did see a guy who looked a lot like that. Mm. And the way that they reveal that when it reveals he was just a guy waiting for his daughter, as you see the way the camera's angle looks like Walt's walking towards him and just is about to cross him, the daughter comes up and you realize it was all...
Daughter's wearing pink as well.
Yeah, and it kind of had a bit of a Kaylee Ehrmantraut feel to it. The thing is, though, that, you know, after we've had this big thing of sort of like, Walt's smarter than you, he's luckier for you, and in that moment, no fault of his own, his luck ran out and a rogue element came and fucked everything up.
Yeah.
Which that's was a really yeah, nice an, way to an, add...
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
To end the episode. But then, you know, Walt...
Jesse, and I mean, this is so open, all of that.
Well, is Jesse trying to hit him? Well, I mean, this is the question
it,
going
Where is it going? That's the thing. Usually so far, even like with the cliffhangers, there is almost a really, really direct suggestion, and it feels very kind of palpable. With this, yeah, you get the feeling that something is suggested, but you're like, I have absolutely no idea. I don't feel like I can speculate about anything. I'll just watch next week. And think about other stuff in the meantime, because there's not actually anything particularly perplex. Like, I mean, it is, but not in the way it was presented. Like, you have to, I don't know, it was really oddly anticlimactic, but not in a good way.
I thought when he said, like, we're going to hit him where he lives, I'm like, you've got to please tell me you're going to tell us what Jesse's planning on doing before you end the episode. And they didn't. And yeah, that annoyed me. I was like,
see, we were speculating about this, after we watched it. Like, what are we referencing? Like, school, we were thinking maybe something interesting, like calling back to Grey Matter, which would be a very welcome call.
I mean, what Jesse's thing about Walt is, you know, that his most important thing is his name, is the Heisenberg Empire, but I'm like, you can't really go after that anymore because it's over. You could go the family, but he's kind of made a point of saying, I'm not, you know, actually going to go for your home, I'm going to hit you where it hurts. Also, he's working with Hank, so it has to be semi-legal. So I think he's going to go for Grey Matter or the school. I mean, the school, it seems a bit weird, but you have to think, well, it is the last season. This is where Jesse met Walt. You know, it does have this nice kind of full circle quality
to it. Yeah, and they do like to bookend, that we know. But...
Oh, yeah, they're definitely going to bookend the series, and they kind of are in the sense that it is more about sort of Walt and Hank and Jesse and, you know, that small core group of people. But I hadn't really no idea what Jesse's planning here, which I guess makes me want to watch the next episode, you know, more than ever, but I don't like to be put in that position through this way.
Yeah, but, I mean, and it is interesting kind of seeing Jesse's kind of open-endedness at the end. And, I mean, obviously, yes, we understand that that is the point, but we feel really that it probably could have, should have been handled a lot better than... It is maybe, I don't know. We've got episode 13 coming up next week, and then we got Ozymandias, so we're pretty confident. It's Breaking Bad. Like we're not disappointed about what's going to happen. We're just disappointed in the way that we're teased into waiting
yes,
for another week.
I think, look, I mean, so when you hit upon an episode of Breaking Bad that doesn't blow you away, it's not really, it's just like, well, they had to save something for next week, you know? I mean, it's just they're building to the next point,
and after confessions.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, confessions was, you know, one of the greatest moments of the series, and I was like, and kind of before I started watching this, I was like, yeah, this is the one where they're going to slow it down a bit. This is going to be the disappointing episode, and it was, I guess.
It was,
but that's
you know,
fine.
Like, it's still
it was
great.
Not
and you,
bad,
and you still had a lot of like obligatory kind of oh shit moments at times.
Yeah, no, I was still hooked. I was just and my heart was racing during that first scene. But, I mean, it also. That was the other problem, is it really never topped its opening moments, which is never good.
I think also just while we're talking about Jesse kind of doing his kind of vague "I'll hit you where it hurts," I can't wait until that makes sense. To some degree, but it was interesting kind of like going from that into Walt's promise of something happening next week, because it's one shot. It's him, as we saw last episode, we get one half of a phone conversation, which is always interesting, and there is a lot of suspense there as to who he's calling, because you're thinking maybe Skyler, maybe Saul, maybe, and then back of your mind is not Lydia, but maybe Todd, and then it is revealed that he's talking to Todd, and it's like, hey, it's Walt. What does he say? Does he say, hey, it's me or something? And then he says, I'm okay. You're like picking up on every
listen,
word for
Todd,
who it is. And then he says, I've got a job for your uncle. It's just pushing in on him towards the end of that. But it's a really weird moment that usually, I mean, he just kind of moves in on him, and then it just starts moving up. And then you look at the roof of the car, and before you can even be... give yourself half a second to think about why you're looking at the roof of the car, it cuts to black. So you're like, why did it move?
Yeah.
Why did it move onto the top of the... That's just one retarded... Just I don't get it. Just, why did that happen? Annoyed me. I was just confused.
I thought it was nice.
First time I saw it and noticed it, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Then the second time I was like, eh.
No, nah. I thought it was just a kind of nice touch of after sort of Walt's set up this potential kind of bombshell that they kind of pan up into the openness, you know.
But they don't. That's my point. If they'd gone into the openness, then I would have liked it, but they didn't. They just stopped at the, like
yeah,
half a meter.
Suggested in, openness. That's
half,
fine.
Half a meter above his head.
Yeah, just it's the same basic kind of meaning of the shot. It's just done in a slightly different way. I mean, when you go into the trees, that's a bit kind of hackneyed, so they thought they'd go into the roof of the car and have
the
reflection.
They don't stop there. It cuts before the movement stops, and it's just like, why is the movement... No, it's just like a... comma when it should be a full stop.
But that's what I'm saying. It's all about the open-endedness, so it does have this kind of finality.
And I get that, but like as far as like in terms of how they could have done it, there again, entire kind of end of that entire cliffhanger kind of sequence is handled. It could have been a lot better. So you know,
I mean, fair enough. I don't really.
But two
care.
Theories from this. I think, you know, it could make it more... like, the fact that we kind of have this suggestion that Jesse wants to kill Walt, Walt wants to kill Jesse. That's ultimately the most obvious suggestion. Because this is Breaking Bad, I don't think that's necessarily at all where it's heading.
And also, so, Walt doesn't want to kill Jesse.
Exactly.
Even if the hit is on Jesse, and it could be on Hank or, you know, fucking Skyler, just to make everything a bit crazy.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to. He feels like he has to. Which is a big difference, whereas Jesse obviously wants to.
Yeah. But, And I think Heisenberg... I think, but there's also just this other aspect that maybe Heisenberg, were he in complete control of Walt's soul, and, like, we have kind of been looking at how incrementally Walt has been becoming more and more Heisenberg over time. Heisenberg, if he was in the position to, or needed to, or if he was in complete control of Walt's soul at this point, I think it's pretty reasonable that he might have killed Jesse by now. Maybe, when we're talking about increments of, like, Heisenberg taking over Walt's soul, that could be, if Heisenberg's final move could be to kill Jesse, that's just a potential thing. I don't think it's likely, but it's a potential thing.
I think you got to be careful in not trying to overstate the duality of Walt Heisenberg too much, because that's part of what kind of is key to the show, is that this lays within Walter White, you know, it's not. But anyway,
I think, and this is just my idea, just kind of looking at a few of the puzzle pieces we have in play, Todd has a big mouth. We kind of got this established in the cold open of last episode, where he was kind of just talking about the biggest train robbery apparently in history in a packed diner, quite casually. Yeah. So we kind of understand that he has a big mouth. With this, it's quite conscionable that he could crap to Lydia about this situation, who seeks to get involved, and then potentially being worried about the potential for... Because, I mean, we also have another piece that, as Gomi says, Jesse has told him about Lydia, so she would understandably... And she's always so concerned about, you know, all the missing... All the links and kind of tying everything up, so it's all... Everything's in place. I think it's quite reasonable that she could kidnap Jesse, and I think a lot of people have kind of been theorizing for a long time that... That might be what the gun's for, to rescue Jesse.
And I still think that's what it is. Quite reasonable. I think it makes the most sense.
This could be how we get to that point, that if Todd blabs to Lydia about after his involvement with Walt, Lydia then goes after Jesse, just as potentially something is going on with whatever Jesse's plan to hit Walt where his home is. Yeah, see, I mean...
I don't know. I think that's plausible. I generally think, as a good rule of thumb, if you can predict it, then... It's not the case.
I mean, apart from the marijuana, the rice.
Yeah, we did. We predicted how that would go down, pretty much. Mm. But look, let's wrap this up, I think. Favorite moment of the episode?
You go first.
I just thought the cold open. I thought it was the best direction. It was kind of the most interesting. It was the most absorbing. And that probably speaks to my general qualms with this episode, that they never matched the intensity of that opening.
Yeah. Just for the suggestion of it, and with the very suggestive nature of it, and the parallel with last week, I think the entire, I suppose, any kind of Hank Jesse interaction this episode, but I suppose I'll go with just even the moment where the camera kind of moves behind the camera, because I always get a little bit excited when I see a camera acknowledged on screen, but that one.
Hmm.
The he was my teacher. I think that was
really
brought it back.
I just
to
had so many confessions last episode. I think I was all confessioned out.
No, but this is like a true, real.
Yeah, I know.
Just the reality of the situation would have been so. I think that's what we're getting a lot from Jesse now, is that he will be a prophet, and he won't talk shit. He's gonna do the real things.
Yeah.
I just love that suggestion in Jesse, that all of this comes from a real place of pain and just
yeah, kind of it just feels conviction. The most real and the least kind of structured, like Hank or Walt himself, or
and also just
Skyler or Marie. Yeah,
the idea, just I know it won't happen, but just the idea as well that he could have improvised the whole confession just was enough to kind of send me around the bend.
Or they could have written it.
Yeah, that's but, not... like, yeah, written a half-hour confession.
Yeah, that's... I've heard of weird things like that before. Yeah. Can't think of exactly where, but shit like that does go down. Like, if they got the writer's assistant to do it.
Yeah.
Funniest moment?
Probably when Marie says, is this bad for Walt? Hank says, yeah, very. Marie says, good, I'm staying. I'll hit up lasagna. Your phone's ringing.
Yeah, also funny she mentions lasagna. I'm like, oh, because he's used to eating it like a scab.
But I just love any moment where you're saying "fuck yeah, Marie" instead of "Jesus Christ, Marie." I mean, that's pretty
good. Yeah, I do love me some Marie. I just think the funniest moment was basically the whole story of how Walt got the gasoline everywhere.
See, that's not funny for me anymore. That's just like, oh, dude, are you doing, it was like, you're just so going,
over the top this week that it was face, pretty dude. Funny no, for me. Yeah, no. I think
I'm
so.
I'm just like head in my hands at that point. Like, you're just like, oh, Walt.
Anyway, we'll be back next week with season two Hajili? Tihajili? Anyway, it's a reference to a Native American land, which I assume is where the money is buried, but or somewhere in the desert, because I know that they film on. I don't actually know the people, the name, because my. Look, we're Australian. We don't know Native American culture that well. We're very sorry. So anyway, we're going to head off. Also, we haven't been talking about the next times on Breaking Bad. I've been watching them. They give you nothing. They don't, like, there's no point.
Mr.
I'm not,
X, suggestions. Yeah. You know, just enough to kind of keep you excited.
They're not as bad as the Mad Men ones, which are fucking hilariously vague. But they really don't offer. So unless I see something kind of worth discussing, I'll give you sufficient warning and talk about it. But I think they're kind of off the tables. Table. Anyway, thanks for listening. Email us at cavaliersdocinema@gmail.com. We've been having a few emails. We'd love to have more. And
everyone is welcome.
Yes, you can visit cavaliersdotelevision.blogspot.com and cavaliersdocinema.blogspot.com. And rate and review us on iTunes.
All that.
That'd be great. Although apparently there's some problem with like rating us on iTunes. And I've actually had that problem myself. But anyway, so we're going to head off. We can't play you music because we're having some massive technical issues on our end. It's amazing we actually managed to record this podcast and upload it at all. But thanks for listening and have a good one.